The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I see that sunshine arising. Jimmy Sangenberger in for George Brockler today here on News Talk 710 KNUS, doing double duty, a.k.a. bookending on the station today. Of course, back 5 to 7 with the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Be sure to tune in then for another great couple of hours. So much a pleasure and a privilege to be with you. I was just in this chair in the last local show yesterday, in for Stephen Tubbs, so it's great to be back here. We will open up the phones again in the next segment, of course, at 303-696-1971. That is our telephone number to join into the festivities. You can also text into the show on the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone. We're going to talk a bit this hour about K through 12 education. People are so focused on this issue, as we should be, especially right now when there are school boards up all across the state, in every school district across this state of Colorado. There are school board positions up. And of course, we need to talk about the issues of critical race theory in our schools and how there's no place for that. We need to talk about masking kids and the dangers of that and push back. Those are key issues for this particular election. But at all times, every year, pandemic or not, it is imperative that we make sure that K through 12 education is funded properly and that we are spending it properly. Because when we have so much money going to our K through 12 system, if you're not actually getting into the classroom and it's just going to bloated bureaucracies, for example, or significant proportions, we're not doing it right. We're not doing it right. There's a brand new report that has some fascinating insights from the Common Sense Institute on what's happening as far as education funding. It is authored by Dr. Brenda Bosch DeConer, PhD, the Mike A. Leprino Free Enterprise Fellow at the Common Sense Institute, and she joins me now to break this down. Brenda, welcome to the program. It's good to talk with you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. I am so glad that you guys did this, and I'm sure that the timeliness of this is not by accident, since we have school board races across the state right now as people are very directly attuned to K through 12 education and what's happening in, again, school boards everywhere. But let's kind of break this down a little bit with the overall top line. First of all, what are the top line conclusions here? What did you notice? And why approach K through 12 funding in the ways that you guys did for Common Sense Institute?
Yeah, thanks. It's the overall goal of the report was to really just understand how much money do we have for kids in our public schools. Just that simple question of how much are we spending? And then also a little bit of a harder question, but where is it going? And I think actually the first question ends up being harder because you will hear lots of different numbers being thrown around. It's actually really hard with different funding sources to kind of come to those top line numbers. But what we did to try to get to that is say, one way to look at it is to look at what the state legislature directs in funding. So that's state and local funding that goes through the state legislature called the School Finance Act funding. There's that pot, but there's also these other pots of money that include mill levy overrides, which is what some local taxpayers in many communities have passed extra property taxes to go directly to their public K-12 schools. So there's those taxes, there's federal grants, there's state grants. And the Colorado Department of Education puts all this data out on our website that has this total amount of revenue and also breaks it down by expenditures. And so what we just did was really just say, hey, we're going to take this publicly available data and try to make it easier to understand for the general public so that we can come to some kind of common agreement about how much money do our schools have and where is it going.
And so in terms of the actual revenue that's coming in, broadly speaking, because obviously there are discrepancies. We have super large districts like, for example, Denver Public Schools, Jefferson County Schools, and then we have small districts that can be very small with only a handful of schools in those districts, especially in rural communities. But what do the overall revenue numbers show from what they're taking in from these various sources?
Yeah, so if you look at just the School Finance Act funding that the state legislature controls, it's about $9,000 per pupil is the state average, but the range amongst districts is anywhere from $8,000 all the way up to almost $20,000 per pupil. So there is a big range. And then if you use the kind of all-in look, which is what we do in our report to look at that extra property taxes, the federal grants, the state grants that go into it, you get a statewide average that's closer to $15,000 per pupil. And to your point, you know, there's just very big variation region to region or district to district. So, you know, the metro area is around that 15,000 per pupil mark. But you go out to some of the rural areas where they have higher, their economies of scale aren't as great. So they have higher expenses to educate kids. And so a per pupil amount in Grand Junction, for example, or in West Central regions, around 24,000 per pupil compared to the metro region of 15,000. And so there's just a lot of different variation. I think that's where part of us trying to put this information out there was to say it's important to understand the variation, the detail in this funding landscape before we start making these kind of big decisions about statewide funding solutions.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Brenda DeConer. She is the author of a new report for the Common Sense Institute on Dollars and Data 2021, looking at the K through 12 and education funding here in Colorado. So we just talked a little bit about the revenue, and that's striking to keep in mind, especially as we then get to the expense side. So by and large, how are those dollars going into K through 12 through the various sources that you're talking about? How are those actually spent, and to what extent is it going into the classroom through teacher salaries and other things?
Yes. So we did find, we're able to, so again, this is all publicly available data from the Colorado Department of Education, and they break it down into these big, big buckets of instruction and support. And what we found is that that instruction bucket is going down over time. The share of the total is going down, and the share of the total being allocated to support services is going up. So things that are in the instruction bucket are teacher salaries, really important, right? You know, individuals that are supporting the classroom, like math interventionists, reading specialists. Things that go to the support bucket are things like health and student counseling, transportation and operations is in that as well. And so you're kind of seeing the like ancillary services and this kind of student well-being and health and support, which we know is important, but that bucket is growing and the bucket going to teacher salaries is shrinking. And so that's just a trend we've seen over the past decade.
Would support services then include administrators like principals and deans?
Yes. So that is another thing. It includes both district level administrators, so kind of central office bureaucrats, as well as school administrators too. So that is also going in. And then we broke it down more granularly into those buckets. And so the school and district administration bucket has also been growing as a share of the total over time.
It's so fascinating to see because this is nothing new. I don't remember how many years ago it was, but at one point there was an effort to get, I think it was 60 cents of every dollar into the classroom or something like that. And it wasn't a successful initiative. But there's always been, not always, but for at least a decade, there's been a lot of chatter about how we're getting less going into the classroom. And people want to pay teachers more, especially with the rising cost of living. Yet that's not happening. And we're not getting support. It's astounding to me how many teachers I have met who have told me they have to spend a lot of money on their own classroom resources. We're talking about things as simple as tissues that they need to buy for their classroom and spending a lot of money on those things. It's outrageous to me.
That's right. I think that we know from research, too, that teachers are by far the biggest impact on a kid's likelihood of being successful. And having a good quality teacher who has the resources they need, the supplies they need in the classroom is the most important thing. And so I think that's what we were trying to highlight, saying we have growing revenues over time, so that those top line revenue numbers have been growing year over year since the Great Recession, except for the pandemic year. But they've been steadily growing, and yet the share we're allocating to the classroom has been declining. And I think that's a real important point for policy discussions.
So here in terms of the salary, according to what you have from the Common Sense Institute, the statewide average teacher salary was $58,219. However, that state average, as you guys say, masks the wide variation in salaries that occurs at the regional and school district level. Can you just talk a little bit about some of those disparities from when we talk about the Denver metro area to rural communities to mountain communities and so forth?
Yes, there is huge variation. And the metro area itself is closer to about $60,000 is the average salary. But, I mean, even within the metro region, that includes Boulder, and their average salary is $82,000, while you have somebody like Brighton, which is just north of Denver, and their average salary is $52,000. So there's huge variation even within the metro region. And then you look outside the metro region, and you have other areas the rural areas have a little bit lower salaries, like kind of northeast, or if you're looking down southwest at Durango, which is around $40,000 is their average salary. And I think the one thing I want to note, too, is we have a statewide charter authorizer called the Charter School Institute. They authorize charter schools across the state that aren't tied to school districts, and their average teacher salary is $43,500. And so they're on the lower end of this average salary amount. They have, throughout the report, they have lower revenues, lower expenditures. They're operating on less. Many of these schools are also getting actually really fantastic outcomes, but this disparity in funding is a problem that the Charter School Institute is regularly pointing out, that they don't have access to the same funding. I think they get about 25% less per pupil on average.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Brenda DeConer. She is the Mike A. Loprino Free Enterprise Fellow at the Common Sense Institute, author of this brand new report, just came out a couple of days ago, looking into K-12 education funding in Colorado. So when we go to that support services side, I mean, there's a lot of concern from our listeners, someone texting in about, for example, critical race theory being taught through teacher services where they have some experts come in, so-called experts in some cases, come in and they do, you know, instruction for educators. They do professional development and so forth. When you have a professional development speaker come in, is that counted under support services? And I don't just mean for CRT. I mean, in general, when they bring in professional development or have workshops and so forth, would that be support services or would that fall under instruction? Do you know?
That is support services, and that is a bucket that has been growing over time. If you look at kind of the staff support bucket, is what that kind of specifically falls under. Definitely a growing expense that we, very anecdotally, but often hear isn't actually very effective for teacher professional development. Is not great just as a state that we do.
So you've spent the last decade working in education policy at the national and the state level, and I think, you know, we have a lot of frustration, rightly so, at the numbers you're saying as far as instruction going down, funding that's going in from the revenue into instruction, while we see administrative costs and other support services go up. A lot of that is administrative bloat. And I think a big part of that administrative bloat is because we have all of these federal regulations and mandates that come down from on high. We keep ad nauseum adding these. And so then you need more administrators to be hired to actually do all the compliance stuff. So is a lot of that rooted in the expansion of the federal government's involvement in K-12 education?
You have expansion of federal government and state government, and I would argue school districts themselves.
Yeah.
You've just got layers of bureaucracy that are continuing to grow. I mean, you look at Denver Public Schools central office, which is bigger than the State Department's office, and it's not a surprise, right, that at each of these layers there's more regulations, there's just extra burden. And so I am sensitive to that argument that they have to hire more staff to comply. But I think that we should all think about what that means and how we fix that,
No, exactly. I mean, that's to a point that the federal government is, that's a theme today, is how expansive the federal government is, but as much too involved in K-12 education. To what extent are you noticing, if you've looked into this at all, that diversity and hiring administrators related to diversity positions, which we know is very common at the college level, that is a piece of the support services element?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think that some of the larger districts have individuals dedicated to kind of that type of, you know, the DEI position or mm-hmm. whatnot. But I don't think the vast majority of Colorado school districts are small rural districts, and I don't think they kind of have people dedicated to that because they don't have the manpower. But it is a good question to think about for urban districts.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm also curious, for folks who are listening who are considering school board races, may want to ask candidates running for re-election or candidates who are running to be on the school board, what do you think they might want to ask relative to the budget for their local school district?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask, like, what share of your budget's going to instruction? And don't, you know, they have this data, too. So I think that's where if you get the, like, oh, that's hard to, what do you count as instruction? They're actually, this data is clearly delineated. And I think you can have and get an easy answer of, I want to know how much is actually going to my kid's classroom. Mm-hmm. What share of your budget? And, you know, is that growing over time? Are my teachers well compensated? Are they being paid competitively with neighboring districts? You know, I'm a parent myself, and that's what I want to know, because I want to make sure that, of course, my kids have access to the best teachers, and that means that they do need to be competitively paid.
Relative to pay, this is an interesting stat, a couple of stats from the report that you wrote for the Common Sense Institute. The share of total spending being allocated to teacher salaries has decreased on average across the state between 2010 and 2020 from 41% to 35.6%. That's striking given all the increase in money, keep in mind, that's been going into the K-12 system. But as you say, at the same time, benefits for teachers saw an increase from 9.7% to 11.6% of total spending. I just find that interesting. Can you expand on that a little bit, what those benefits entail? Because it seems like there's less of a percentage that's going to the actual pay, but we're giving them more money, or at least spending more money in terms of benefits.
That's right. Yeah, I think that it's just, you're seeing the squeezes kind of on budgets from the public pension system, PARA, and there's an unfunded liability that the state has to pay down, and districts also contribute to it. So the district's share of money going to pay down that unfunded liability has been growing. And so overall, we found that around $900 million is being spent on trying to pay down the unfunded liability, which could, you know, that could be directed to teacher salaries. And we actually divided it by the number of teachers, and it's about 16,000 per teacher that we're, as a state, spending, not on even their benefits. This is just to pay down the PARA's unfunded liability. Mm. Plus, you look at how much we're paying to go into the PARA accounts, too. So that's, you kind of see that going, that category going up of benefits because of that. Because of the insolvency of the PARA.
Yeah, and while they've tinkered around the edges with PARA, there's been no concerted effort to really address the fundamental issues with that public employee pension program. Just a couple mm-hmm. minutes left, a couple final questions for you, Dr. Brenda DeConer, PhD and fellow at the Common Sense Institute. Is there anything that we haven't hit on that you think is important to mention for folks regarding this report, or that we could take away from the report?
Yeah, I think one of the key takeaways is, you know, there's constantly talk as of statewide tax increases for education. I imagine there's going to be one in the 2022 ballot. And I think my point or my takeaway is that I think there's a very good case to make that some school districts do need more money. I mean, you look at Aspen's per pupil all-in funding is $28,000 compared to Pueblo City is at $12,000. And the demographics could not be different. You've got Pueblo City is highly impacted, poverty, big Hispanic population versus Aspen, which is wealthy, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think those are the questions we'd be asking, is how are we helping as a state? The goal of school finance is to help fund districts who don't have local wealth. So we should be thinking about how are we helping Pueblo City instead of, you know, giving more money to Aspen that doesn't need it. Those are the questions we'd be having that are tough to have at the Capitol, But that's what needs to happen, not a do we have a blanket statewide tax that everybody, you know, funnels more money into an ineffective funding formula.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hopeful that legislators will do that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very important point. And it's a circumspect sort of nuanced way to look at this issue, which, of course, is not easy in politics. Finally, where can people go to access this report and learn more if they'd like?
Absolutely. Our website, commonsenseinstituteco.org, is where you can find the report and some interactive charts and graphs. Please.
Again, it's called Dollars and Data 2021, A Look at K-12 Education Funding in Colorado. The author, longtime education policy expert, our guest, Dr. Brenda DeConer, the Mike A. Leprino Free Enterprise Fellow at the Common Sense Institute. Again, commonsenseinstituteco.org is the place to go to check out this report, which has just absolutely fascinating details and will arm you with information to ask school board candidates this go around. Thank you so much for calling in today and joining us. I appreciate you breaking this down, Dr. Brenda DeConer. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Once again, Dr. Brenda DeConer from the Common Sense Institute joining us here on The George Show. Jimmy Sengenberger in for George Brockler. We're going to take a quick break, pick up on the K-12 education topic on the other side. Give us a call, 303-696-1971. We're going to be right back on News Talk 710 KNUS. Continuing now, Jimmy Sengenberger in for George Randy Corcoran at the top of this hour. And, of course, you got the Jimmy Sengenberger Show 5 to 7 this evening. I'm bookending here on KNUS. Good morning. You might have heard me yesterday, last time you were listening to the radio when I was in for Stephen Tubbs. Great to be with you. This morning, 303-696-1971, our telephone number. If you want to join in to the festivities, we have full lines right now. But what a fascinating report from the Common Sense Institute about the sources of revenue. We got $13.22 billion in local, state, and federal revenue sources going into K-12 in fiscal year 2020. That's a lot of money, averaging out at $19,853 per pupil, but with wide disparities based on where kids go to school. But one thing that is consistent across the state, as our guest, Dr. Brenda DeConer, was telling us here from the Common Sense Institute in their striking report, is that we have seen a precipitous decline in the percentage of funding that is going toward instruction, as opposed to what is going toward support services, a.k.a. administration. That's stunning. All right, let's get to the phones now. Jim in Douglas County, you're on with Jimmy Sengenberger in for George Brockler. Good morning.
Good morning, Jimmy.
What's up?
Thanks for doing such a great job exposing this Anderson fellow in Denver.
Oh, good old Tay Anderson. You know, he's an avid reader of my articles. How do I know that? You might have heard me say it. Or play the clip I did a couple of weeks ago. So after Tay Anderson's vote for censure, where the school board in Denver was wagging their finger at Tay. They were saying, oh, you naughty boy, we're going to wag our finger, publicly scolding you and do a censure, you naughty boy, you. After that, he held a little press conference. And I was out there, and he said, how you doing, Jimmy? I said, hey, Tay, you know, I'm doing all right. How about you? He said, good. Been loving your articles you're writing about me every week.
Oh.
I was like, oh, thank you. Thanks for letting me know that you're a fan of my columns in the Denver Gazette, Colorado Politics. Good to know you read them.
So he's a predator and a molester. Wow.
Well,
can't say that. Accused.
Accused molester, definite predator.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a serial predator based on, you can judge that. Based on the report that came out for Denver Public Schools conducted or put together by the Investigations Law Group, I mean, without a doubt, a serial predator is an accurate description of Tay, even just going to the fact that he likes to flirt with minors.
So what is the Denver District Attorney sleeping on that report? What kind of world do we live in where school board members get away with hurting our children? And I don't mean physically, but also mentally.
Yeah. See, I I don't know about any legal avenues for what he may or may not have done illegally in terms of those messages. But as far as the allegations of sexual assault, I mean, Denver Post reported this, that Beth McCann had, well, the police, Denver police, brought a sexual assault case to McCann, and she said that she couldn't prove this beyond a reasonable doubt, therefore she wasn't going to pursue it in court, which raises a big question, okay, what's out there? What is this circumstance that maybe you didn't find Beth McCann, Democrat partisan DA, you didn't find that it was worth pursuing? But there might be a lot of parents out there in Denver who are a little bit concerned about that.
I know there are. So let me ask you a question. If he did half of what he's accused of, it's no wonder he wanted to get rid of the police officers in every school. All criminals do. But it's always the police fault.
Yeah. Nope. Absolutely. SROs, that was one of his big, big stinks, without a doubt. Well, and he touts that as one of his great achievements.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, because he's not alone. He has, I'm sure, lots of friends that are in his clique. But I wanted to ask you about a different county, talking about taxes. In Arapahoe County, which where we used to be, we paid $6,000 a year in taxes for mostly schools. Most of those taxes go to schools.
Do you mean property taxes? That's what you were paying?
Taxes. Okay. That's right, every year. So essentially, went to a school, local school in Arapahoe County. You would know the name of it. It's a big 4A school. And we went to the back to school thing. And of course, I like libraries, so going to the library. And all of these, you know, you walk into a library, they have those upstand little things that stand books up. And the library has their book of the month and all that they show you when you walk in. Mm-hmm. Well, every one of those books that was posted for the back to school, this is the get acquainted time, had some sort of diversity and some sort of strange subject matter. Mm. No classics and no, you know, Never Cry Wolf or any of that. Mm-hmm. Every one of those books was dedicated and written about, I'll say just obscure history or background or whatever it is. Because I don't, you know, I don't want to exclude anybody and I don't want to include anyone.
Sure, go on.
So I walked out of there, talked to family members, and one of our family members was going to the school, and I said, this is the wrong place. They said, why? It's doing what they're advertising in the library. I said, is this what they're drilling into our kids? Mm-hmm. And now it turns out it is. This was about 7 years ago.
Wow.
So this is a librarian making a choice to post alternative lifestyles, and that's not being nice.
I see.
And those lifestyles, in some cases, are a choice by some and not others. So we pulled them out, went to private school.
Uh-huh.
The private school, of course, was a whole bunch more. You know, you could buy a used minivan every year for private school costs, plus $6,000 a year in taxes.
Right. So can we get to the punchline? I don't want to rush you, Jim, but I got a couple other calls that are waiting on hold. So if you want to get to the punchline here, because I follow along with the track.
Hit three ways. Bad management, $6,000 in taxes, and then we had to pay another three times that for private school.
Right.
It's just unbelievable how we're being fleeced.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is underscores some of the significance to these school board elections right now, without a doubt, that right now, finally, parents are becoming more attuned. You had that experience seven or so years ago, Jim.
Yeah.
But when we look at parents right now, they're finally waking up, especially as they've seen that they're at the mercy of the unions and the school districts that they are forced to go to. And then if they want to take their kids elsewhere, the money doesn't follow the kids. We need to change this system so that the money we fund students, not systems. And your story is exactly exemplary of why we need to do that.
So. Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Jim. Thanks. Great call. Great points here joining us, Jim, on 710 KNUS, 303-696-1971. Our telephone number. And real quick, I want to get to Elaine also on this topic of K-12 education. But take a listen to this. This is the education secretary being asked by Senator Bill Cassidy about whether or not parents should be given a choice if the unions force their schools to be closed. Going to Jim's point about being at the mercy of these public schools, government-run schools.
By the way, my wife is a chair of a board of a public charter school, full disclosure. They managed. They just opened up their gymnasium. They just converted their lunchroom. They made it work for those children who disproportionately are minorities. But why shouldn't the parent have the choice? to take her child elsewhere if she decides, well, it may be that they have a lousy ventilation system, but they have a good ventilation system, and so I'm going to take my child to the private school with a good ventilation system so that my child doesn't lose 7 months of education this year. Why should she not have that choice?
Senator, it's my belief that all children should have access to a safe school and one where all children can succeed. And it was important that all schools be given the tools and the resources.
So if they're to, I'll finish with this, if they are to have access and defying science, unions demand that a school close, why would that access not include the ability to take dollars that would go to the public school, they're not open, they're not there for the kid, to take the child to a school which is open? Can you tell me, should that parent, just yes or no, should that parent have the right to take their child?
Well, it requires more than a yes or no. It's more nuanced than that.
More nuanced than that. No, it doesn't require more than a yes or a no. Fund students, not systems. Don't make kids suffer at the mercy of whether or not their school district is open or closed because of what the unions do, or whether there are policies in place that parents might not want for their kids for one reason or another. And this is why we are seeing expansions in other states. Colorado needs this come the next legislative session. And Republicans need to campaign boldly on this idea in 2022. It's a winning issue. We're seeing other states expand school choice, expand this idea of funding students, not systems. And it's especially powerful because parents are waking up. Let's go to Elaine in Denver. Elaine, you're on with Jimmy in for George. What's going on?
Hi. I'd like to add another category that your guest had for school spending.
Please.
And that would be cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
Our school district passed a bond for a lot of money.
Which district is that?
I don't want to say.
Okay.
Because
okay.
You'll find out the rest. Anyway, so a lot of money, millions of dollars for school, and citizens voted for it. Where I substitute teach in that school district, mm-hmm. I was horrified where the money went. It went to cosmetics, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Example. TVs in the hallways, advertising, prep rallies, in the gyms, redoing the floors where there are enormously expensive graphics put on the floors, including the copy of a famous basketball player, his signature, a sign out on the road that's like a Times Square sign where it flashes mm-hmm. pictures as well as information. On a road that nobody travels. It was horrifying to
wow.
see all because our money went to cosmetics, an enormous amount, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That reminds me of what college campuses are doing, only unnecessarily, because if this is a public school, they're not competing for kids to come to that school, certainly not the way
no.
we have our system set up. Whereas colleges and universities, oftentimes they try to spruce up their campuses so it's beautiful and flashy and you can give them that dynamic experience that they're going for, if they're actually allowed for on-campus learning, by the way. Otherwise, you're spending a heck of a lot of money and waste, but that's another issue. Back to your point, mm-hmm. that's a great observation, and it's stunning to think about how wasteful these
yes.
government-run districts can be and are often
yes.
are.
Because my feeling was, well, I'm never going to vote for a bond when they do that. A library, I was subbing in a library, and one of the people in the school told me, oh, yeah, they're going to redo this library completely, pull up the rug, repaint the library. And I looked at it. The rug was a beautiful rug, and the walls certainly didn't need to be painted or anything. So, again, it was just, whoa, we have the money. Let's go put icing on the cake. That's all it was.
Always. That just shows how wasteful government is. And I'm guessing that that's more of an affluent school district.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No.
Oh, wow. Then
no.
even more striking. Why exactly. in the world are they not giving teachers more pay? Or substitute
that
teachers more pay?
Well, I would say the teachers.
Yeah, I know.
We're paying, but no, definitely. That's what I was looking for. Pay the teachers.
Yeah.
Because this school district definitely needed teachers who
well,
get paid well.
And I understand you're wanting now why you didn't want to say the school district name if you're a substitute teacher that teaches in that district, although I know listeners would like you to reveal the name. I understand your hesitancy there working as a substitute teacher. So, hey, Elaine, thank you so much for calling in. That's deeply disturbing and yet another example of profligate, wasteful government spending that doesn't just happen. $2,000 for a toilet seat at the federal government, but it can be a $2,000 repainting of the library, I guess.
Oh, it costs way more than that.
I know. Yeah. I know, absolutely. All right. Okay. Thanks for the call, Elaine. Appreciate it. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger in for George Brockler. Final segment of this program, and I'm back at 5 p.m. tonight with the Jimmy Sangenberger Show right here. News Talk 710 KNUS. Wrapping up and winding down, Jimmy Sangenberger in for George Brockler. Bookending here on KNUS, back 5 to 7 tonight, including a great hour, 6 o'clock, with G. Brown, the legendary Denver Post music writer for 26 years, conducted over 3,000 interviews with more than 1,000 musicians. Also, Jeff Crump, both of them in studio. Definitely going to want to check that out. Plus, going to share, if you missed it yesterday, my interview with Sheriff Steve Reams of Weld County, who, by the way, has an incredibly fun event coming up next Saturday. If you go to reamsforcolorado.com, you can check it out. I'm going to be performing with my side project blues band, Jimmy Jr. and the Roaring Elephants. Of course, blowing the harmonica for yours truly. That's going to be up at the historic Fort Lupton. Tickets, $22. They are available. Be sure, if you're interested or you live up that way or whatever, would love to see you out there. More details and whatnot tonight when I have my interview with Sheriff Reams. All right, 303-696-1971. Last call of the day. Randy Corcoran coming up in just a bit. Let's go to Andy in Castle Rock to round things out. Good morning, Andy.
Hey, good morning. I like to take exceptions of something you said a half an hour ago.
Yes, please.
When you were talking about how you let the speakers say that people who do not believe.
Hey, Andy, can you get, I don't know if you're close enough or you've got some, we're not hearing you quite so well. Bluetooth maybe,
sure.
Or, yeah, that's better.
No, okay. You let somebody say that people who didn't believe that Trump, that Trump didn't win, it was like a cult.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so in Mesa County last election cycle, you know, we have a problem over there with our Secretary of State saying, hey, everything was a great election, and then the clerk over there saying, hey, they had corruption. You know, you were talking about also about independence, how we lost with independence. And then mm-hmm. over in Mesa County, they were discovering that people were voting from vacant lots and from car washes and from different things like that. So how are we going to take that into 2022 when we can't trust those guys back in 2020?
Oh, I am so glad you mentioned Mesa, by the way. The first half hour of my show tonight will be on the hoopla in Mesa. Look, there's not evidence to support what you're saying about Mesa. I'm going to be blunt, and I'm also going to be blunt in saying that the fundamental basis that Tina Peters has put forward, and I wrote this in a weekly column for Colorado Politics, Clearing Up the Hoopla in Mesa. I talk about this, and I'll discuss it tonight on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, 5 p.m. She had the basis of getting this guy named Gerald Wood to go image the hard drive before and after this process called the Trusted Build, because she suspected that there were going to be logs deleted and election records deleted and so forth. Well, here's how she could have suspected it, because she oversaw a Trusted Build in 2019, and that's exactly what's supposed to happen in a Trusted Build. They literally delete all of those things so that they can put in a new installation of the software as well as a new installation of Windows, which is exactly why county clerks across the state back up their hard drives or back up the election records that are required, which does not include Windows logs, by the way. Now, I'm bringing this up because the claims that Tina Peters is making about the election in 2020 don't line up and aren't trustworthy. That's not to say that Jenna Griswold is a trustworthy actor. She's a partisan hack, to be sure. But I am very suspicious of any claims that are coming out from Mesa County when you have a county clerk who actually let in somebody who's not an employee that she claimed to be an employee so that he could do a hard drive before and after to make it seem as though stuff was being done illicitly in the Trusted Build. That's literally supposed to happen by design.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you say tonight, because now I'm like going, I don't trust any of these guys as far as I can throw them.
Well, and you know what, Andy? I can't blame you for that, frankly, especially when you have partisan hackery on the part of somebody like Jenna Griswold, for example, or other clerks around the state. I've been very critical of my county clerk in Arapahoe County, Joan Lopez, for the past few years. I mean, very critical. In fact, I got the color or the Arapahoe Republican Party to vote unanimously to call for Joan Lopez's resignation. This was back in the fall of 2019. Like, we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of that resolution. So I understand that, especially when there's so much confusion about how the processes work and so forth. But I also think that it is important for us to take this moment and this opportunity to really learn how things are supposed to operate in terms of the elections and how they actually do operate and function. And that's one of the big things that I'll be breaking down tonight. And I appreciate your openness to listening.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Andy. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate that call, and it underscores something so important, which is that trust in our elections is absolutely critical. That is true. And there are things that we need to do to address election integrity issues. For example, we have signature verification process here in Colorado. Here in Colorado, we have a signature verification process, but it is not audited. There needs to be put in place an audit of the signature verification system so that we can verify the accuracy of who's voting, because we want to count every vote, but we need to make sure that they are valid votes. We heard earlier, listener texted in concerns about ballot harvesting. That's not a huge issue here in Colorado. We have better limits than other states, but it is an issue, and it's something that needs to be tightened up. Voter ID. We need to improve the voter ID system here. It's not nearly good enough as far as what's required for voter ID. And there are several other things that we need to do, absolutely without question. But when we talk about the election process as well, we have to be clear about how things are supposed to function. And that's where I got upset or frustrated, not so much upset, but frustrated, and not at Andy or any listener calling in or texting in or anything like that, but at the fact that there is a process in place with this trusted bill that sounds, you know, like, oh, what in the world is a trusted bill? Why would Dominion or the Secretary of State call the process a trusted bill if we don't have trust in that process? And then you hear things about it. Oh, my gosh, look at what's deleted from the hard drives. But then you don't hear the part that's this. It's supposed to be deleted, because what they do is clear the computers for a new, fresh installation that is up to date with the latest features and so forth. And that's why county clerks back up the election records that are required. For my column, I interviewed the El Paso County clerk, Chuck Brewerman, who said, look, he gave me a statement and he said, look, we do back up these election records that are required. That's a regular standard of process. And if you're not doing it, then you're not doing your job right as clerk. If you're suddenly surprised or you have some sort of suspicion, what I want to know and I want to find out is, did they back up the election records before the trusted build, before that first hard drive imaging on a Sunday night on May 23rd? Sunday night when Tina Peters, this Gerald Wood and Sandra Brown in Tina's office went in and took the first image of the hard drive. Then he had the trusted build, and then they went back in and did another image. I just want to be honest and clear about how the process is supposed to work. And it's hard to trust where things go and claims that are made if that is not being represented properly by that clerk who's making these questionable claims, or claims putting doubt in people's minds about an election. Well, that is it for us today, at least for me, in these 3 hours. I'm back 5 to 7 tonight. I will dive into the Tina Peters saga in the first half hour, so be sure to tune into that and also check out my column, Clearing Up the Hoopla in Mesa. Randy Corcoran coming up in just a matter of moments right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Jimmy Sangenberger in for George Brockler. Have a great rest of weekend, and may God bless America.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.